Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the June 5th, 2017 meeting of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources. My apologies to everyone for my tardiness meeting with someone who's having a difficult day. We have a couple of items on our agenda this afternoon. First is a work session on the Department of Agriculture, their federal grant application, and then that's going to be followed by a public hearing on Senate Bill 847. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on Ag's federal grant application.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, I'm in the committee. Department of Agriculture is here requesting approval to apply for a USDA Federal State Marketing Improvement Program grant for the amount of $149,000 to market dairy products. The department's here to describe the grant further.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Lauren Henderson. I'm the Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I have with me Lindsay Ng, our Program Director for our Market Access and Certification Program, and Lindsay can briefly describe what the Federal State Marketing Improvement Program is, but before she does that, I will just tell you we're doing this in collaboration with the Oregon Dairy Products Commission. This is something that originally they thought they could do on their own, and USDA said no, it needed to be a state agency. So we're glad to do this. It's a very important, as you all know, and we've talked to you before about agriculture and what export markets mean to agriculture in this state, given the predominance that we rely on those markets. So Lindsay, why don't you just 1 minute of what the federal state program is.
Sure. Again, for the record, my name is Lindsay Ng with the Department of Agriculture. So the Federal State Market Improvement Program is with the USDA Agricultural Marketing Service, and that basically allows for market improvement opportunities that provide broader benefit beyond an individual company or across an industry. What the Dairy Products Commission here in Oregon has been doing over the past several years is they've been working with the U.S. Dairy Export Council to look at broadening Oregon's export of dairy products. We do not have a significant percentage of our dairy products produced in the state that go to export markets. If we can expand our markets beyond Oregon, then that allows for more processing capacity of the amount of milk that's produced in the state. And so there's a huge benefit for further sustained growth to the industry by expanding markets. So they've been working in Southeast Asia to expand their export opportunities with processors here in the state. U.S. Dairy Export Council has partnered with our commission on this project to help facilitate consolidated loads, starting with specialty cheese products into high-end retail markets in Southeast Asia. They've taken several missions and had some early successes, and this project would also expand some of those opportunities that they've found over the past couple of years to our partner states around the West that also have high percentages of specialty cheese production in their states.
And if I could, just to wrap up, we will work with the Dairy Products Commission on an intergovernmental agreement to receive the funds if this is approved. There isn't any of our state dollars going to this other than our in-kind match with our staff providing oversight in the collaboration for that. We're a vehicle for this important grant at this point in time. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you all very much. Subcommittee members, is there any discussion, any questions, any comments for our panel this afternoon?
Looks good.
All right. Very good. Anyone else? Folks, thank you. Appreciate your presentation very much.
Mr. Chair, Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending approval of the request to apply for the federal grant.
Appreciate that. Co-Chair Frederick?
Chair Witt, I move approval of the Legislative Fiscal Office's report on the grant, or not on the grant for the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Frederick moves the LFO recommendation to approve the Department of Agriculture's federal grant application. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, is there any opposition to his motion? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much. It's approved.
I'll carry.
Thank you very much, Senator Girod.
And away you go.
Very good. And I'm going to close the work session on the Department of Ag's federal grant application and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 847. Mr. Stainer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Today there's a public hearing on Senate Bill 847, and 847 sets up a legal framework for dealing with the transfer of underperforming assets that are in the Common School Fund.
Very good. Do we have anyone from the department presenting?
No.
Okay. All right. With that, I'm going to call up, please, Al Elkins and Tom Wolf.
Can I speak up as well? Because I got to get to another meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator. Please, if you'd be first.
Sorry about that.
I have.
We didn't write the name on the list. It's not your fault. You guys can come up.
No, it's okay. We'll wait.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Witt and Co-Chair Frederick and the rest of the committee. I'm excited about being here. This is a bill that I've been working on for a few sessions. The idea came to me and a number of others through discussions at the state of Washington, which and its formation had similar trust lands set up in Washington as there are here. And back in the 1980s, they came up with a trust land transfer program because they were finding that some of the land that they held in trust was not exceeding their expectations of producing money because new endangered species were coming up, other kinds of things were happening, and so they were trying to figure out how can we keep the trust lands doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is making money for the kids of the state of Washington. And in their state, they have a slightly different way in which they were doing things, and they had the ability to have resources that could actually go into buying basically the land and then transferring it. So what they would do is they would say, this is underperforming property. So they'd have a bill in the legislature, they'd put forth some money, and in that money they would say, that standing timber is worth X number of dollars, the land underneath it is worth X number of dollars. They'd separate those, they'd buy it themselves, put the money for the trees into the school fund, and then take the other money and go out and look for some property that they could manage and which would continue to make money for the Common School Fund. So we have a slightly different setting with respect to our resources, but the idea is the same. It is if you have public lands, we want to keep them public lands. And we have in the Common School Fund, school trust lands, about 658,500 acres. Most of it's in eastern Oregon, but it's all over the state. Used by many of our citizens for a lot of different reasons, recreational to grazing land, all sorts of things. As time has gone on, some of that land has come into cities, in urban growth boundaries around Redmond and Bend and other places. Its value is different than it was as a rangeland. And the whole purpose of this is giving one more tool in the toolbox for the state lands and the state itself to try to figure out how can we take land that is underperforming or doing other things and figure out another way to keep public lands, because I believe that having those public lands is really a public service to our entire state. The Elliott became a big issue, as we all know, over the last few years. And originally when I was writing this bill, it was really with the Elliott in mind. This year, this does not have a emergency clause. It was not to get necessarily involved in that particular deal. But as you've seen, the conversations have now gone. There is more and more conversation about doing some of the same kinds of things. Our Secretary of State came up with the idea of transferring some money to the some land to the federal government and doing some other kinds of transfers. We've had a conversation about Oregon State University using part of the land. There's a lot of conversations which go along exactly like this particular bill would allow, where you get resources that come in, you figure out what the value of that resource that you're trading to a city. Maybe they need a park and they have some money to buy a park, but we have the land and they want to transfer that land to them and they're willing to pay something that we can do the same thing. And we can set up a fund that would be used to buy more land so we keep more land. For those of us who are in hunting and fishing communities, the lack of land to do that on is becoming more and more apparent as different companies have decided to make it so that you have to buy or lease times to go onto those properties. So the fact of having public lands for those many activities that we as Oregonians approve is really important. And so this isn't the panacea to solve all problems, but it is a tool to put in the toolbox of, at the State Land Board on how to go about keeping what we have right now available to the public for the future. And I encourage your support of this. I did get a last-minute conversation with Revenue about when you transfer lands, if it has a lien on it or some other kinds of things, they don't want to lose the possibility of getting that money. I don't think you will find any of the state lands that we would be in the process of doing that with a lien on it, because they're all common school fund lands, but they want to look that all over, and I hope that they do and make sure that we don't have a problem, because if somebody owes something, I'd like to collect it. Mm-hmm. As I told the revenue people, if you'd collect all the money that other people owe us, it would be really helpful for us right now, but they haven't done that to this point. But I do want to make sure that they look it all over, and if there's a issue that is there, that we address it so that we don't have an unexpected problem. But I'm open to any questions, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator. And for the record, would you please introduce yourself?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay.
Thank you very much. And again, Senator, I apologize for having literally looked right through you. So my sincere apologies.
Not a problem at all. And you were in a hurry. You'd been taking care of other people's problems, and then you walked in.
A bit rattled, I think, but it's still not an adequate excuse. So thank you, anyways, for
thank
understanding.
You.
Questions or comments for the senator? Senator Girard, please.
Yes. Being someone that's on capital construction, you're asking, I mean, if we're talking about the Elliott or we're talking about anything else, we are always overprescribed for money. So there's an opportunity cost no matter what we do. And I'm not saying that, you know, buying a forest isn't a good idea. I'm just saying that it would come at the cost of higher ed or somebody else, and that it gets a little bit overwhelming at times, that and the numbers are so large on some of these requests that I personally think you'd be better off to sell it with conditions.
It is my opinion, if we actually were in the process of doing this exchange with the Elliott, we'd probably catch up with what Washington's done in their 15 years of their work. So I agree. This is the Elliott's a bigger issue. This is a tool that you need in your toolbox for a lot of other places that are not big like the Elliott, where you may have a tribe that has continuous property with ours, and they would really like to have that land, and you want to do a transfer with them. This would allow that to happen. They could actually come up with the resources to put part of the money that we've been getting annually on the lease or whatever of that land into the Common School Fund, and then take the other money and go out and buy some better land that would give more opportunity for Oregonians to have public land. So it doesn't have to my intention, and particularly this year, because I thought the Elliott was already going on a different course, was to have a conversation about all of the other state lands that are owned by the trust. And for me, there's a real distinction between trust land and other state-owned land, because we are holding it in trust for the kids of Oregon. That's a different issue than it is if we have a state forest. So for me, that's why this bill is that one other tool in the toolkit. And how we go about allocating resources and doing that with respect to the Elliott, we're all going to have to be involved in that conversation.
Anyone else? Senator, I had a couple of questions that I don't expect that you would necessarily have the answers to, but if you do, it would make life easy. So I've heard tell that there are plans to have the Elliott going forward managed by a private contractor. Are you aware?
Yeah, that conversation has gone on for a long time. They did. Currently, they are not having it done by the State Forestry Department. That mm-hmm. was a deal. And because it was costing more money just to manage, and we were having that conversation. I know that the Land Board was having that conversation. I do not know what they've decided to do with that, and there might be people that could answer that question. But I think all of those conversations, from my perspective, if they make it so that we have more money going into the Common School Fund from this land, which was given to us at statehood for that purpose, is great.
Okay, very good. Last chance, anyone? Senator Robin, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
I hope you do as well.
I'll head off to rules. We'll find out.
And now I would like to call up, please, Al Elkins and Tom Wolf.
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick and Representative Witt, members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 847. Senator Rowland talked about access, and the Oregon Hunters Association adopted a position several years ago that in part stated that we were opposed to any transfer of public lands that would endanger access for recreational users. We support this bill because we believe it provides a good framework for a coordinated transfer of lands in Oregon, and through a public process would help safeguard access to public lands for recreational users. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Welcome.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, here to represent the, I've mentioned the numbers before, so I'm not going to go into that. So, and just to clarify, a while ago I said that I was testifying in this committee on the last time on budget. This is not a budget, so technically I'm still okay. Just I saw a couple smirks up there, so I just want to clarify that before I go on. Trout Unlimited is a unique group. We're a conservation group composed of hunters and anglers, and I'm a fairly typical representative of that. I've been hunting and fishing since I was 5 years old, and if you do the math in one month, that'll be 60 years. So it's a long time to do that, and probably more so than any other part of the recreational community. Hunting and fishing holds protecting public land in a high value because we're losing it. And without land that we can all share and go on and hunt and fish, we have no place to go. This bill, SB 847, provides a tool for taking lands in the Common School Fund that are not producing money as expected, and allows this to stay, transfer them and allow them to stay in the public hands. And I think it's a good tool. Because as this state continues to grow and grow, and as my community, the hunting and fishing community, continues to look for ways to have public land that we can hunt and fish on, because that's very important to you. And as many of you know up there, hunting and fishing is a wonderful sport. It's a passion for us. And this bill provides a tool for us to pursue our passion. So I ask you to support this bill and move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Senator Girard?
Yes. Usually I'm on the same side as you two, but this I'm a little bit of a quandary, because if they were to sell the land, there's nothing to say that there can't be an easement or a covenant in there to protect the right to hunt, fish, hike, and recreate. That was actually part of the original sell, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm kind of at a loss why you would interfere is probably the wrong word, why you don't want it to go to a private sale.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, our experience in Trout Unlimited is that when you sell the land, even if there's intent to allow easement, generally there's not an easement for the whole part of it. And speaking, and I know this has come up, and Elliot and Al can probably second me on this, but one of the problems that we faced, if we want to use the Elliot as an example, that they were still going to allow us to have access to like 50% of the Elliot. The problem with hunting and fishing is, especially hunting, is the best land for hunters on public land, frankly, is the land that's been harvested. And So the area that's been harvested would generally be in a private sale out of bounds for hunting. So whereas if you kept the land in public domain and still allowed harvest as part of what goes on in that forest, it would still allow the hunters access to this cereal habitat, to which is the best habitat for harvesting deer and elk. So, I mean, that's kind of where Trout Unlimited is on this. I don't know if that answers your question.
Chair, co-chairs, this Al Elkins again. Excuse me, Senator, I wanted to answer your question if I could. When we're involved, I represent 10,000 people who enjoy the outdoors and enjoy hunting. They are not, in my mind, those that want to pay for, they pay up front through the Department of Fish and Wildlife, but they would prefer not having to pay access fees. When private companies are involved, usually more and more today, access fees or fees, whatever you want to call them, are attached to the property that they own or are starting to buy. And we saw that a little bit in the Elliott Forest proposal in the latter stages of that. We saw they wanted to have consideration for future access fees to the property, which people are not paying for now. So that motivates us to not want to close those public lands, but keep them open for free access to the public.
Anything else?
I'm good.
I'm sorry, Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a conversation in this committee with the Department of Forestry, and it was on the Elliott. Today, I believe he stated they were harvesting about 5 million board feet. I asked him what the growth was in that forest, and he said about 75 million board feet. And I said, what would happen if you just harvested 65 million board feet? And I believe that, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he say it was $26 million a year to the schools? I believe that's what he said. So I'm with you guys in the aspect that, remember, we, in fact, I think Representative Witt and I co-sponsored a bill that was a no-net loss. Mm-hmm. And it passed the House, but it never got past the Senate. And I think we should get back and start looking at those again, because if we start selling off our lands, what will be the day when the reckoning comes? Because pretty soon you'll either pay a lot or you'll end up not having the availability to go into those lands.
So I would just make the comment that there's been a great deal of discussion about, up until last year, a declining sales of licenses and tags. Hopefully we've turned the corner substantially. But I have had a number of people tell me that they are disinclined to purchase licenses in areas where it is overwhelmingly fee hunting only.
Yes.
So
I agree.
So it doesn't help. I personally believe that folks have a right to do as they will with their own private lands, but I've also had a lot of requests for a public hearing on that subject as well. So if there's nothing else, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would like to call up Director Paul, if I might, please, and sir, not to surprise you with anything. I just want to follow up on my line of questioning with Senator Roblin earlier with regard to what I understand to be the intention to move forward with a private contractor to manage the Elliott.
Yes, Chair Witt, my name is Jim Paul, the director of the Department of State Lands. I'd be happy to answer that question and give you a little context and background. So about a year ago is when our agencies, including the Department of State Lands and the Department of Forestry, were preparing our proposed budgets for this session. At that time, we were on the path of the Elliott Protocol that was on a path to transfer ownership of Elliott. In light of that, both agency budgets that were submitted to the governor's office and then subsequently became the governor's recommended budgets, for both budgets, neither budget included any resources for managing the Elliott lands. What it did was it anticipated a transfer of those lands and therefore essentially reduced budgets around those trust lands that forestry manages for DSL to just those lands outside of the Elliott. So coming into this session, both agencies have been gliding down in terms of our resources specifically to the Elliott. Now that things changed on May 9th. We are now following direction from the land board to look at a public ownership option. However, the fact remains that neither of our budgets have any resources to manage the Elliott next biennium, and we were anticipating moving the management of the Elliott into what we call a custodial management arrangement with a private contractor that a year ago, when it was envisioned, would essentially hold the land harmless, keep the land maintained in its current condition in anticipation of a transfer to a new owner. So the analogy of not changing horses midstream is one analogy. In order to avoid the risk that come July 1, there is no management, any oversight of that forest, we are proceeding under this approach and plan to contract with this third party. It's a one-year contract, renewable annually for up to 5 years. Coincidentally, it's a subcontractor named Titan Kelly LLC that is actually the same contractor Department of Forestry has used on the Elliott in the past and continues to use today on their lands within the boundaries of the Elliott State Forest. So we assume a fairly smooth transition. As I said, it's simply a custodial management contract. It doesn't include any type of harvesting or timber management, and nothing in the contract would preclude us from any additional options in terms of what we might do on the forest beyond just the pure custodial approach, which includes keeping roads in good condition and in compliance with state law, finishing up reforestation from a few of the sales that finished up this spring on the Elliott, and finally dealing with any issues to do with the public, dumping of trash, for example, or questions that come up from the public. They are on site there to hopefully address them. If not, they call the Department of State Lands, and our land management staff would take it from there. So that's the status in terms of the near term, at least, with the LA. But I'd be happy if there are any other questions on that.
Well, so I would assume then that the decision to move forward with a private contractor is a decision that has happened since we reviewed your budget.
Chair, with the decision to move forward with the private contractor occurred, it was implicit in the budget.
It is?
Yes.
It is implicit.
Yes, it's implicit in the budget.
So yeah. The budget that it was presented to us, there have been no changes relative to the management of the Elliott.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, that was one of my major concerns, Senator Girard.
Yeah, the question I had, rumors in this building are on a daily basis. There was some talk about a trade with federal forests that would be more amenable to harvest. Are you guys involved in anything like that?
Co-Chair Witt, Senator Girard, I believe those rumors stem from some of the discussion that occurred at the May 9th State Land Board meeting. That was the meeting where the Land Board unanimously terminated the protocol and proceeding with the sale and also provided the department direction on where to go from here. Some of that direction included direction and statements by Secretary of State Richardson, who requested that part of our direction moving forward include looking at talking with the feds and looking at this potential option of a federal land exchange.
Anyone else? Certainly appreciate your impromptu appearance. Thank you very much. And I would just share with you, as someone who will be bringing your budget forward soon, it's good to know that we have the most up-to-date figures. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, John Charles. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit policy research center And I've been following the Elliott State Forest and the Common School Trust lands and writing about them for over 20 years. And I appreciate the effort that Senator Roblin has made on this bill to solve a thorny political and policy problem, but I think ultimately the bill, which is fairly benign, I mean, it just allows something to happen in the future that would also require future appropriations of money that would be the subject of hearings. I think ultimately it will not have much effect, which is why I'm neither opposing it nor supporting it. I just think that it's problematic because of an issue that has come forward in light of actually how the Elliott State Forest has been handled, which is that they were on the verge of accepting a check, the land board was, for $220.8 million from private parties, and the net transfer of that money after transaction costs would have gone into the common school fund, where in perpetuity it would earn total returns likely of 5% or more each year, and that would benefit every school district in the state twice a year when distributions are made. And instead, they're not going to do that. They're now, the governor's proposal and other land board members is to seek authorization from you to sell $100 million of bonds, or COPs, actually, with estimated debt service of almost $200 million over 25 years, so that the public can buy something the public already owns. Now, personally, I'm not following the logic there. We had $220 million right here, a check, ready to be deposited in the Common School Fund. That's now off the table. Instead, we're going to borrow $100 million, repay almost $200 million, and wind up with the exact same land we already had. Now, who pays the debt service? Well, the public. And a subset of the public is specifically public school teachers, employees, parents of students, and school board members who are expecting this endowment called the Common School Fund to benefit them twice a year with checks. That's what happens now. Instead, you're holding them back with $200 million of debt service so we can buy out something we already own. The Oregon School Board Association, as you may know, right before the May 9th meeting, sent a letter to the land board saying they intend to litigate over this, that if you're not going to take the money in hand, they will file a breach of trust lawsuit. And I don't think they've filed that yet, and I don't represent them, but I think they have a pretty strong case that you just walked away from a really good deal so you can put yourself in debt. I mean, so I think that would, keep in mind, there's 1.5 million acres of trust lands. According to the most recent trust land report, also presented at the May 9th meeting, the return on asset value for 2016 for those lands, it was 0.04%, which is pretty lame. They're losing money on rangelands and forest lands. They're supposed to be making money for schools. They're losing money. It seems to me the fatal flaw of the whole transfer process laid out in this bill is it keeps either has debt service or some kind of taxation of the public to buy out the public. It seems to me the only thing that benefits students for the whole 1.5 million acres of land is if they're not earning much, and almost none of them earn much except commercial real estate, which is a tiny part of the portfolio. If you have an offer from private capital, from the tribes, from anonymous Chinese billionaires, from whoever, to actually take these lame assets or money-losing assets off the hands, here's a check, goes in the Common School Fund, makes a lot of money, goes out to the school districts. Now, that's a compelling argument. That's not what's envisioned under this bill, which is why I think the bill is actually, if you pass it, not going to amount to anything. So I just wanted to point this out as something that it's sort of another form of the procrastination that we've been having for the last 25 years on common school trust lands of not really wanting to address the declining value of them. So if you want to pass it, fine, but I think you'll ultimately be disappointed. That'll be really, really hard to finance a deal going forward with debt compared to something else you could do, like selling it to private parties who just bring you money. That's all. Thank you.
Any questions or comments? I would have to tell you, John, that you have an ability to draw attention to the sublime. So for that, I thank you. If for no other reason than for years, I thought I was crazy because I bought my own farm. I loved it so much a second time following a divorce. And now you know, seeing that the state of Oregon does it too, I mean, I don't feel nearly as bad. So. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman. We're a full-service organization here.
Thank you very much. All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate your appearance. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Jesse Salzberg and Rhett Lawrence. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair, Committee. My name is Jesse Salisbury. I represent Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. BHA, we started about 13 years ago around a campfire in Oregon. And our promise and our mission is to be the sportsman's voice for the protection of our public lands and waters. That is our sole rock. That is our sole priority. And it's done us well in the past 14 years. We've grown to be over 13,000 members across the United States, including some provinces in Canada. Obviously, our mission statement centers around access and opportunity to hunt, fish, and recreate on public lands. And that is why I'm here representing Backcountry Hunters Anglers, also our Oregon chapter, and the sportsman's community as a whole in support for 847. We believe that Senator Roblin's leadership towards building this mechanism to help to ensure access and opportunity for us to fish and recreate and hunt and camp on is right up the whole reason why we started in the first place. You know, we're talking about a $12.8 billion outdoor consumer spending annually in the state of Oregon. And I'm not even quite sure if that includes, you know, multipliers such as, you know, rural communities. And you know, we're also talking about tags and permits and all the access taxes that hunters and anglers provide the state. All we want is the kind of the status quo that we've come to rely on and that we would be lucky to share with future generations, and that's our sole purpose and why we support this bill.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Witt and Frederick, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club, here today to offer our support for Senate Bill 847. You've already heard from Senator Roblin what it would do, and I've submitted written testimony, so I'll be brief as well. You know, I think I would just reiterate what Senator Roblin had pointed out, that, you know, the state of Washington has had a program like this in place since 1989. They've saved, you know, 120,000 acres of land in that time, and, you know, I think that provides a good model for what we could be doing here with the Trust Land Transfer Program. And then, you know, Sierra Club came to this issue because of the Elliott, you know, to this concept because of the Elliott issue. And we, you know, obviously that's going to be a difficult conversation. We are strongly supportive of, you know, the governor's or treasurer's plans to come up with that bonding money. We understand that's a tough challenge, but I believe this body is up to it. But I also wanted to stress that, you know, we believe that's a separate conversation from this one. Senate Bill 847 is, you know, strictly, you know, as has been said, another tool in the toolbox to you know, prevent issues like we're seeing with Elliott from happening on down the road, to pull other encumbered lands out of that trust category and set it aside for public ownership. So we strongly support this bill and urge this committee to do the same. Thank you.
Questions for the panel? Gentlemen, thank you both very, very much. Thank you. Appreciate your appearance. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Paige Spence and Bob Van Dyke. Welcome to both of you.
Co-chairs and committee members, my name for the record is Bob Van Dyke, and I work for the Wild Salmon Center. I'm here to testify in support of the bill. I don't have a ton to add to what's been said already, but I will say this. It's not just the Elliott. We've got a lot of common school fund lands, I think around 740,000 of them. And unfortunately, in some cases, the mandate for these lands, the revenue production, is in tension with other uses. I think we're going to be seeing more of this, frankly, in the future on the east side of the state. There's a lot of range land over there that's common school land, half a million acres, and we work with a lot of hunting groups as well. And they're concerned about keeping access to those lands, not getting those lands sold off. So a couple things I'd like to emphasize is this bill doesn't require anything. It just creates a mechanism. And the way the mechanism will work is the land board would identify lands and a deal that it thought was appropriate. And then it would go to you, the legislature, to decide if you wanted to shape the deal, endorse the deal. So it really puts the legislature in the driver's seat, sets up a pretty simple process, creates an account where monies can go, and that's about it. To be frank, in some ways, I'm not sure why it got a fiscal, because it just creates this process. There's no money's going to be spent in the near future because of this. And lastly, I'll just add, as others did, that this really is now, although something like this could have been used for the Elliott, and from our view, would have been helpful over time with the Elliott. If we had had this, we might have been able to incrementally buy out places that couldn't be harvested from the Common School Fund and then manage the rest instead of coming to sort of a crisis moment. That's what happened in Washington State. They set this system up so that they could, bit by bit over time, if the areas that were popular for mountain biking or recreation that were near urban area, where that's what the public wanted, this set up a system where a county or a city could acquire and manage that land and decouple it from the Common School Fund. So I think it's a good tool to be able to use incrementally and deal with some of these tensions over time, and I'd encourage you to support it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs Frederick Witt and committee members. For the record, Paige Spence, director of the Oregon Conservation Network, of which Sierra Club, Wild Salmon Center, Trout Unlimited, League of Women Voters of Oregon, and other groups in the room are members. And we are asking you to support Senate Bill 847. I will spare you some of my brilliant testimony since a lot of it has already been encapsulated by my colleagues. But I do want to point out that the legislation before us today really is modeled after the Washington program, which has been around since the late 80s. And we heard from the director of Washington DNR in the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee hearing about how successful their program has been. It has not been used many times. And as Bob mentioned, the legislature would retain the authority to deal with the land transfer if there were a process that were created. And the funds to compensate the Common School Fund for those lands might come from state or local revenues. But as Bob mentioned, it also doesn't create any financial obligation for the state, just passing the bill. And we have heard a lot about the Elliott today, and that's no surprise, but this bill has a far broader reach than the Elliott and is not necessary and expected to be used necessarily for the Elliott. But the Elliott's about 82,500 acres, and we still have over 650,000 acres of common school fund lands in Oregon. And so we've got sort of twin aims here. Is one is providing stable funding for our schools through productive timber harvesting on some state lands, and then other is managing other lands, which may include Oregon's most special places for conservation, right? So if we have other unprofitable lands that are still in the Common School Fund in the wake of the Elliott getting so much attention in the media, we want to avoid additional litigation that might come around by having unprofitable lands that are obligated financially to the Common School Fund. So by creating the trust land transfer process, it gives us that opportunity to immediately decouple lands that are not generating the requisite legal revenue and hopefully swap them out for lands that do. So I will echo my colleagues in urging your support for this bill. Thank you.
Subcommittee members, I want to thank you both very much for your testimony. And even though I do feel good that other people do crazy things like buying things twice, like I did once, I'm also pleased to hear about the other values that we hold important as Oregonians in terms of our public lands. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to call forward, please, Michael Silvaccio and Peggy Lynch. Good afternoon to both of you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio. I'm here today representing the Portland Audubon Society. We're sitting here in support of the bill today. As was previously mentioned, it's based on a successful Washington model. We all know that there's been a longstanding tension, I think, between the mandates on our trust land, between revenue generation and public benefit. But this bill in front of you does not mandate any particular course of action. It doesn't mandate spending. It also does not necessarily require public appropriation of dollars into this fund to work. It does set up a fund. Public appropriation is but one way that money can find its way into the fund. So I want to emphasize that this is a much broader tool than just one particular purchase or one type of purchase even. And obviously, if there were an appropriation, the legislature would still retain that final authority. I do also want to correct a couple of misapprehensions. The idea that the state already owns this forest, I don't mean to bring up the issue of the farm again, but I would suggest that as the state land board is a trustee of these trust lands, the state owns the forest in much the same way that a trustee owns the estate that they're, that's been placed in their charge. They wouldn't be able to go sell it and buy nice things. But if we do want to assume for the purposes of testimony that the state owns this in that particular context, we also have to acknowledge that usually when we buy something with a bond or a COP proceeds, we're actually giving that money to another third party somewhere, whether that be a contractor or whether that be a financial firm or someone else providing a service or a product. If we want to operate under the assumption that the state, quote unquote, owns the forest, then the state will still, quote unquote, own the proceeds. And although there will be some kind of debt service attached to that, Mr. Charles's previous testimony suggested that the total returns on that money could be expected to be between 5 and 8%, which would exceed the debt service, presumably, unless we were in some kind of really crazy financial circumstances. But I'm betting that the state treasury can beat 8%, for heaven's sake. The other thing that I wanted to mention briefly is the it was said that there's a compelling argument to take these money losing assets off of your hands. I'll point out briefly that in 2010, the actual equity assets of the Common School Fund had experienced a real loss of value, while the real estate assets realized value. And we didn't see a parade of people coming up in front of committee saying, lose these money-losing assets because they've obviously lost you money and we should sink all of that money into buying more forest land. That would be absurd. Part of a rational, prudently diversified investment portfolio is that you have different classes of assets. Some are going to be more fluctuating than others. Some are going to typically earn more than others. Some are going to be more stable than others. In this particular case, we've seen a few bad years on the Elliott Forest in terms of returns. That is not a long-term systemic issue. That is the result of relatively, and when I say relatively, I'm putting that in the context of that we've owned this forest for almost a century, relatively recent HCP discussions and lawsuits that have come up recently. So the idea that this is a non-performing asset, I think, belies the fact that a private company decided to offer $220 million to the state for it. That is not something that a private company does to a lame asset. With regard to Senate Bill 847, I think that it's going to work in a lot of situations. I think that there's some situations that it's not going to be appropriate for, but I think that it greatly expands the options that we'll have for dealing with these issues in the future so that we don't keep on seeing a parade of Elliott State Forest issues come before this committee or this legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Peggy. Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. You've already heard almost everything that's already in our testimony. So, and Michael just took the last of my points. The League of Women Voters of the United States believes that the natural resources such as forests and animals and plants living within them should be managed as interrelated parts of life-supporting ecosystems. This bill will allow the state to protect and preserve natural, scenic, cultural, historic, and wildlife sites now owned by the Common School Fund should they become threatened because of the need to provide revenue for the fund. That's really important. This is more than just one little piece of land. This is about all the various pieces of land we have, and they include cultural assets as well. They include wetlands assets that we may want to preserve and find another use for. So it's a way to move assets, the public assets, the public land, from trying to build revenue from them for the Common School Fund, while also protecting those precious assets for Oregonians for the future. You heard about the possibility of rangelands in eastern Oregon. That's another issue. Our schools and the protection of our forests, our rangelands, and wetlands are all important, and one should not be chosen at the expense of another. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
And we support the bill.
Thank you. Any comments? Michael, I appreciated your comments very much. There is one issue that I do disagree with you on, I think. And while there were several bad years in a row on the Elliott in terms of revenue off of timberlands, I think we were on the verge of institutionalized gridlock. And I think some folks overplayed their hand. Have used, I think successfully, laws that were intended to protect and sustain our state's natural resources to an end that was never intended, which is gridlock for many of our public lands, not so much the state as perhaps the federal, but this is the arena that it played out at the state level. And the folks that overplayed their hand, my editorial, I hope realize that they brought us right up to the cusp of losing the very lands to other uses that they had thought that their what I will loosely call monkey-wrenching tactics brought us to. So on that point, I think we disagree. But
Mr. Chair, the point you make is well taken. I'd like to put on the record that the Audubon Society does not necessarily oppose deriving revenue from these lands. We recognize that they are assets. But in terms of their role in a larger portfolio, we don't think that they necessarily should be attaining or even striving for the same kind of returns you'd see in a private equity asset.
On that point, we probably agree.
Chair Witt, let me really quickly make a comment about that, because it's really important related to the other conversation that you had that did not relate to specifically this bill, and that's the conversation about bonding for the Elliott.
Yes.
The important part about that conversation is that by purchasing the assets that are non-harvestable,
yes,
it provides the federal agencies to consider more easily coming up with a habitat conservation plan that will allow some harvesting on those portions of the forest for which that makes sense. And the League has, from the very beginning on the Elliott discussion, said that there are places on the Elliott that have the ability to be harvested and should be. But we need to be able to purchase the conservation portion of that land in order to make sure that an HCP is more likely to happen. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
And I think you make an important point that the HCPs are actually the vehicle by which we get to do commodity value activity in many of our public lands. So I appreciate that, Michael. I would like to have further discussion, frankly, about our disagreement, because I think it's an important lesson going forward as to how we deal with our natural resources and how we relate to each other as Oregonians. So
I certainly agree with that, sir. I'm sure we could talk for hours.
I'm sure we could. Appreciated both of your comments very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else in the public? Bill?
Chair Witt, Vice Chair of Committee, for the record, Bill Clooting, Carpenters Industrial Council. I apologize for not signing up, but listening to the comments, I couldn't sit still. We've gone a long ways the wrong direction. Our forefathers had this programmed out, wrote down to the best of our ability to generate, keep our forests, create jobs. Did you ever think you'd see the day when half the counties in this state is suing the state? I've looked through a lot of these bills, and I see no budget notes for additional funding for the Department of Justice. They're going to need it. They're going to be in court so much on this issue, and it wasn't necessary. This bill, I'm neutral on it. I've read it. It doesn't mandate. That's why I'm neutral on it. I'd like to see where it goes. But one of the proposals on the Elliott was to sell off, trade off part to the federal. Well, you show me a timber sale in the federal forest in the last 25 years didn't wind up in court. Not once, but twice. If any logging was allowed, it got reduced down to the point to where the operators pulled out and left. Meanwhile, our forests are waist deep in waste, burning. The Elliott is there's not a tree in that forest that hasn't got handprints on it. It's been studied for the last 10 years. It got studied again. I just read where the Department of Fish and Wildlife is asking for another year extension for study for the Marble Murrelet. That's on the Clatsop, Elliott, Tillamook. We're almost to the point to where these forests are useless. You heard the point to where wildlife thrives in a forest that has older timber, younger timber, fresh logging. We don't have that today. We don't have that in our state forest today. We've disappointed, let our school kids down. Look at the jobs we've lost. I wear my jobs pin every day. Look at the jobs we've lost in the last 20 years, 25 years. I spoke on this issue many times here, many times in Washington, D.C. Those appeals worked so well in the federal force, stopping any type of activity that these so-called groups said, hey, if it works in the federal force, let's try the state force. Well, they did, and they've done it. These appeals are already printed up, ready to go. Most of them come out of D.C. All it does is ship send them out here, sign them, and here we're in court again. We didn't have to go this route. We could have sat down sensibly and worked out a program for our state force that everybody would have been happy. We've already paid out $400,000 for an appeal on the Elliott. And those attorneys never did a thing, never went in the courtroom. I'm pressuring people, let's take the whole thing to Supreme Court. Right now, I'd bet a dime if we can get it to Supreme Court, we'd win. Not to the extreme, just where we could go back to doing some sensible management in our forest. Put people back to work. Make these counties whole. not like the old days, but make them whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Anyone else? Senator Gerard?
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'm going to pile on a little bit, and Bill, thank you very much for your testimony, because your heart and mine are in the same place. I've moved back to where I grew up, and I grew up in timber country, and I have to say that I got a wonderful education. Our schools were some of the best in the nation when we were able to harvest timber. Mm-hmm. And I think people's heart is in the right place, but their brain isn't when they think that tying up timber sales is such a good thing. And it's got to the point where harvesting a tree is just something wrong for these groups. And by doing that, you increase the fire danger. If you create one major fire, you've released as much greenhouse gases as you had with all fossil fuels combined for a year. So it's just absolutely nuts. Deer and elk habitat, as Bill talked about, is critical for those populations, and they have to have cleared off timber areas. So it's hard for me to listen to people testify, oh, we'll just go give $100 million out of capital construction. And I can tell you right now, that's probably going to have to come out of higher ed or some of the other people that rely on that money. It's not, there's an opportunity cost to all that. So we the state, by allowing this, have really put ourselves in a sticky wicket. And I agree with him. You got Linn County suing over timber, and you have a lot of the counties suing over the fact that it's not being managed correctly. You got the Common School Fund. They're going to be suing. It's just going to be a colossal mess, and we need to deal with it.
Anyone else? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I spoke with an individual from Canada one time, and I asked him how they manage their forests. And he said, well, we manage ours. And I said, well, that we don't? He said, no, special interest groups manage yours.
Well, all of which I think is an argument for us as a state. We need it on the national level, but that's beyond our pay grade here. To decide what it is that we want out of our publicly owned forests. And I believe that we can have anything that we want, and we can do it the best of any place in the world. We've just got to figure out what it is that we want, and we have to deal with each other respectfully, and I think we have to share that same respect with the natural resources that we're trying to manage. Bill, I thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify today on Senate Bill 847? I'm not seeing anyone. Committee members, final word, anyone? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 847. Anything for the good of the order? Subcommittee members, I appreciate it very much. We stand adjourned. Members, I appreciate it very much. We stand adjourned. Subcommittee.